nominating committee meeting will start shortly.
Testing. Testing.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, good morning. I'll start that. We'll be a second, and we'll go back to the. Don't worry, Joe. See if you find the Excel file. We'll go back to the slides in a second. But Adam Peake, and I'm the chair of the 2011 nominating committee. Thank you very much for coming this morning. The purpose of the meeting is to discuss, as the title says there, the Accountability and Transparency Review Team recommendations regarding the nominating committee, and particularly a requirement that we... I'm losing my voice a little bit as well, and I didn't even sing. And the requirement that we begin to consider and take into account the skill sets required of an ICANN director. So this meeting is to take opinion and listen to the community about the type of skills that we should have on the board of directors. That would be individual directors, the type of person that you think should be there, their qualities, their experience, background, and also the collective skill sets. This could also look at the current board, what skills we believe are there, any gaps. In meetings that we've had over the past few days, Rob Hall, in particular, Rob is going to be the 2013 nominating committee chair. Rob has also asked, what do people think we do not need on the board of directors, you know, or what skill sets are overly represented? So we're looking for a balance of knowledge on the ICANN board of directors. Secondary, and this is part of the ATRT process, is that the ATRT came out of the affirmation of commitments, and the affirmation of commitments only refers to directors. The nominating committee, of course, also selects members of supporting organizations and advisory councils, so we would also like information about that. What do you think of the skill sets required on the ALAC, on the GNSO and the CCNSO? And this is really to inform Vanda. Vanda Scartazzini is the incoming nominating committee chair, will be chairing the committee for 2012. So she will be beginning with other members around the table, Tony and Glenn and Shirinish and Sarah. Yeah. So we have members of the nominating committee here who will be using this information to aid them, first of all, in their recruitment of candidates, because the nominating committee is, first of all, a recruitment agency. It'll spend three or four months trying to recruit candidates, and then a two or three month period of selecting candidates. So this information will help in both of those processes. So I think that's the introduction. What's the next slide? It's always a surprise when you can't remember what your next slide is. There we are. This is the text actually from the recommendations, and I don't think we have to read it in particular detail, but it's really talking about the type of skill sets that are required. And it is a formal request that we've made to the constituencies and supporting organisations to respond to the nominating committee on this. So there'll be benchmarking skill sets against similar corporations and governance structures, and that's the job that is ongoing with the Board Governance Committee at the moment. There'll be some training ongoing to help the board not just finding people with the skill sets, but also improving the experience and knowledge of people once they're on the board. And then this part C, reviewing these requirements annually, provides a formal starting point for the NomCom each year. And that's really what the purpose of this meeting and this process is to get input from the community on the type of skills that are required. And then a very important part is to, of course, publish these outcomes of this as part of the call for nominations. And this is the publishing of the statement of interest and the application form. The application form is called, is in our lingo, our language, called a statement of interest. And that will include these particular requirements so that candidates can apply in an appropriate way. So that will begin, I believe, probably in about a month's time, in early December. So there's about a month to get all this information gathered. The next slide, please. And this is really the questions for today. What are the qualities and experience needed on the board? What do we expect of a director? The qualities and experience already covered on the current board and members and any gaps. And I've said this in other meetings, and this is something that requires us to be forward-looking. Vanda's going to begin the process, as I said, in December, but the people that selected will only take their seats this time next year. So you're not filling, if you identify a problem now, these people are not going to be the ones who solve it, because they will be taking their positions next year, and they're in a three-year term. So they'll be starting work in, you know, November of 2012, and they'll be working for 3 years. So we're
five years.
It's basically looking out as far as 5 years from now. So what are the challenges that we expect ICANN to face, expected evolution of the organisation, the evolution of the multi-stakeholder model, ICANN's role as a growingly important international organisation? So that's the kind of thing that we have to consider. We're looking forward and trying to anticipate the type of skills that are needed. With that, I think I can stop for a moment and see if people have a response. And Vanda, perhaps if you would like to say something at the moment.
Yeah, again, another issue that is quite important to remember, that the outreach process demands the help of everyone. Because to reach people around the world with good qualities to most of those positions is a really huge task. And what we need is also an outreach process where each member of this community can reach others and suggest them to apply, suggest them to take a look on these opportunities that are there, read the papers, and make the application to pass through this selection process. It's quite important to have, direct talk with the people around you, because most of the people don't know nothing about ICANN. That is for sure. And after that, some of them we know that could be a good candidate, and they don't know that they can be a good candidate, so they never apply if you don't ask them directly. So the idea, as we did yesterday with all communities here, is to ask your group of friends, group of knowledge, work people that is around you in your country, in your relationships, in your Facebook, wherever. It's the idea to have this word done by a member of this community, because as a member you can explain better what is the idea to be part of this group. Okay, please go ahead. Yeah, please. In the no, I'm okay. We can interrupt.
Thank you, and thank you, Chair, for having me here. So my name is Qing Qiao, and I'm a volunteer for the Registry Constituency Group to join this round table, and I'm also sitting on the GNSO Council. I just have a maybe this question has been understand. I mean, just among the participants, but if you can, I mean, please help us understand the ATRT requirement. How does that differ from the existing NOMCOM requirement? Is that what are the, I mean, the change of kind of what is the point, right? Thank you.
I'd say that it's formalizing it, and it's giving us a requirement to perform this activity. What nominating committees have done in the past is gone to all the organizations that we select for, so we will produce a what is basically a leadership document, and it describes each of the positions, and we have sent that around the GNSO, the CCNSO, ALAC, and the board, and said, please edit this, please update this. So what you're seeing is essentially a job description, and that's been sent around historically by nominating committees to the various entities, and then we've used that as our document that aids candidates to identify, you know, if they want to serve, and do they have the skill sets to serve. What's happening here is a more formal requirement to identify across the board's skills in, I suppose, it's just a more formalised way, and then for the nominating committees essentially to be better informed about these types of skill sets that are needed. And there is also a sort of a mild reporting back requirement that when this time next year, when Vanda comes to the AGM and reports on the work of the year, she will say, we selected them and this is the sort of qualities that they, you know, when we identified the process last year, these candidates met these requirements in this particular way. That's going to be quite a sensitive thing to do because you don't want to go into too much detail of a confidential process. But, you know, there will be a sort of reporting back saying, we did listen to what you said when you said these are the qualities that were needed. And yes, it did inform our selections and this is how. So that it's just formalizing what we've done in the past and also trying to do, I suppose, a better job in listening to the community in taking ideas about this.
Glenn McKnight. My question is with regards to the guidelines of the nomination committee. Is there any obvious or hidden equity issues in terms of looking for certain gender parity or anything that needs to be brought into the evaluation process?
The nominating committee is required in the bylaws and always has done to ensure that there's geographic diversity, and that requirement is met by ensuring that there is at least one director from each of the five regions, and not more than five. So it's a minimum of one and maximum of five. And that will become an issue this year for Vanda's committee because there's currently only one director from the Latin American and Caribbean region and his term is limited. Now, of course, the person can apply again and may apply again, but it does mean that this committee has to place somebody from the Latin American and Caribbean region, which of course means that you want a good pool of candidates from that region to select from. Of course, the current director can reapply, but that doesn't mean that you only want the one applicant. You know, you want a pool to select from, and perhaps, hopefully, you may well select two from that region, but, you know, that's the requirement. You must have one. Gender and other diversity requirements, they are not hardwired into the bylaws as the regional issue is, but I think the nominating committee has always felt very strongly that, that diversity in all its forms is extremely important, and gender has been made an issue. I think it's my personal view is that it's important, if you're going to be an international organisation, to be representative as much as possible of society. And that's what, you know, that's a, but that's a principle that nominating committees can discuss and find your own level of importance about.
Yeah, hi, my name is Jim Prendergast with the Galway Strategy Group. Olaf probably knows me because I was the silent observer on nearly every ATRT call that was out there. Do you have any, what's the status of the direction from the board on the identification of the skill sets? Have you received that? Will you have it before the end of the year as outlined in the documents?
We'll give you an example of that. At the moment, what we have asked for and what the board is doing independently, and Sam, you can perhaps correct me if you know, they're undergoing a similar exercise of identifying the skill sets that they have. They're looking particularly at the board committees and what, you know, there's a lot of, the board has a lot of subcommittees that does a lot of work. They're looking at the skill sets that they use within those committees. And Joette, if you pull up this Excel sheet, I like that one, go over a little. If we just pull those over, and so what, it's just off the edge of the page, but this is a list of attributes that the board uses when it's considering skills for the subcommittees. So it's not the exercise that we're doing, but they've started to identify, they've picked out the attributes on the left-hand side. Ignore the high, medium, and low. They don't use that. And what they're doing when they're considering allocation towards the board subcommittees is look at some of these qualities and say, how many have we got? You know, what balance have we got across our membership in terms of these particular attributes? And there's things, and that's why you can see it's not really tailored exactly towards the nominating committee, but there's skill sets there that you would want to see in a director of an organisation that is dealing with a large budget, complicated issues, risk analysis, risk mitigation, having prior international board experience, executive management skills, and so on and so forth. These are the sorts of things that the board considers at the moment internally. It's not really designed for this process, but this begins to give us a list of possible attributes. And what we're thinking is that, well, we added one, which is independence at the bottom.
Yeah.
And Jean-Jacques may want to speak to that one at some point. What we're thinking is perhaps we should print this or send this around the constituencies and say, please, you'll see at the bottom it says new, and that means if you have an attribute that you think should be there, add it. That's very important. But also, what do you think are the priorities? Is this, I'm not entirely convinced that this is the right way to represent this at the moment, but, you know, what do you think? If you were looking at, thinking about the ICANN board, high, medium, low, is this a reasonable way of trying to get some feedback about this? Legal training, perhaps, you know, do we need, and these are not just a single, you know, you don't want to, this is not one person with, you know, like five lawyers. They actually, you're looking at, you want them to have five or six of these different attributes so that across the whole scope of the 15 or 21 members or whatever, you know, you're well covered by all of these particular issues.
Yeah, and one thing that we need taken into account is that people inside the board will move each year. So the skills are also moving. So one skill that is full now, maybe in 2 years, is completely, you know, lack of this capacity. So it's those things that are quite important to, it's a dynamic process, certainly. But for us, we need to analyze that and see if we are seeing something that is important, it's not there. That's the first point. So, Jean-Jacques.
For people who are accessing remotely, I'm sorry, this form is not available by Adobe Connect, but we will make it available, and it will be on the nominating committee homepage, I should think. So that's the thing. And so, yeah, okay. So Jean-Jacques, and then Alan.
Thank you, Alan Greenberg. I think you want to be careful about the wording on this form. These are not the attributes you want in a director. There are attributes you want on the board. Because, yes, you want some directors with legal training. I don't think you want to follow the edict, which some groups in ICANN and other places seem to do, that the more legal training, the better. You don't want all the directors to be lawyers, to be quite candid. You want people with different perspectives. So although it's important to have these attributes on the board, it is not important to have a specific attribute in every director. And in some cases, you almost want to go treat it as a negative because, forgive me for picking on lawyers, it applies to some of the other attributes. We already have too many lawyers on the board, or we already have too many technical people on the board, or whatever. So how you ask that question, you'll get completely different answers. Yeah. So I think you want to be careful about it. Thank you.
Thank you. That was something I couldn't explain, but yes, that's what I wanted to have done. Jean-Jacques, and then over to Glenn.
This is Jean-Jacques Subonard, for the record. A couple of comments. First of all, I agree very much with what Alan has just said. We are addressing a question of skill sets for the board, not for individuals only. My second thing is about the whole notion of skill sets. I think it's overdone. I can see why it was introduced into the ATRT, etc. In French, we would say ça ouvre le parapluie. It allows some people on the board or elsewhere to open their umbrella against the rain. But I think that there is a risk. We have seen in a very recent past someone of great value who had all the skill sets and more than necessary, and then who, upon leaving the board, makes a very fundamental choice which poses a problem, at least in terms of image, for the whole of ICANN. So what was more important in this particular case? Was it the skills set, or was it the moral and ethical attitude? I think the ethical attitude is as important as any quality or training you can look for. That was my first remark. The second remark is about temporality, or intemporality. That is to say that you're going to go to a huge amount of trouble to make sure that your jigsaw puzzle fits well, that you have all the little details about the skill set. But that will only last for 1 year. So there is a tendency, and this is a sociological truth, that in any organization or society, the things you set up, the framework, the habits, the ceremonials, will have a life of their own, even when their usefulness has been passed. So I think it's useful to remind yourselves that you don't want to make it something too rigid, so that people will feel committed to the process of skill sets, etc., when their utility will have gone by for that particular moment. My third remark is about the danger of extending this too far. For instance, in wanting to prepare for the population of board committees, I think that's simply not the job of the NOMCOM. I think that is one of the chief responsibilities of board members collectively, because it is in their midst, and following Alan's very good advice that we should have a set of skills for the board, not for individuals, it is in their midst that they will choose, as they choose, the person best suited to be their chair and their vice chair. In the same way, they will select people according to what is available. So I think that determining in advance that for the, God knows what, the BGC, you need someone with two doctorates in law, makes no sense. Thanks.
Yep, please. Jim Prendergast, for the record. I guess coming back to my original question, one of the action items coming out of the ATRT is that the Board Governance Committee or the board as a whole should be preparing and delivering what they think is a skill set necessary, or, you know, skill set in general, to the nominating committee for the beginning of the process, so by the end of this year. During the during one of the briefings that we heard, we were told that the Board Governance Committee would get together during the board retreat at the end of September to work on these things. So I guess, have you heard or seen any of those recommendations yet, or has the board signaled to you when you might be receiving them?
Yes, we have. We haven't seen them in a formal sort of presented way. There was a discussion earlier this week between some NomCom members and the Board Governance Committee. So that is ongoing. What we're doing, what Vanda and I are doing, is trying to sort of supplement that process by, you know, taking it into our own hands to try and do the same thing. You know, it's the board is busy and we're as interested as they are. We want to be as informed by you as everybody else. And that's part of transparency, is to try and outreach to everybody in the community. And so we're supplementing that process, if you like. Glenn and then Thomas.
Quite quickly, not to beat a dead horse, but when I look at this shopping list here, it's definitely a corporate culture onus rather than selecting somebody for an not-for-profit employability index. And I think of this as very much a tangible versus an intangible list of skill sets. And what jumps to my mind, a person who's a very effective director would have soft or interpersonal skills that, you know, they're actually not up there, or a team player or empathy or communication skills or listening skills, all those other soft things that need to be brought into it. And again, it doesn't always come in a resume.
Yes, indeed, and this is Olaf Nordling channeling Mary Wong in the chat room in Adobe, saying, not all lawyers have the same skill sets or viewpoints. Although I agree that the board as a whole should have a broad array of experiences and expertise. End of comment.
Thank you, Mary. Yes, Thomas.
Yeah, thanks. Thomas Norton here. So I mean, I have a sort of a range of sort of comments here. On the specific questions of getting sort of feedback from the board, my suggestion would be you figure out from the non-cons perspective when you need input by, and tell the board in no uncertain terms you need to provide this by a certain date. And the fact that the board is busy is not your problem. Looking at this list of attributes, one question I have is this all the attributes that you're looking for? Because one of the challenges here is how do you rank, or, you know, what is the weight of public outreach or prior board involvement relative to a bunch of other skills? And, you know, one of the dangers that I see with this sort of a list is it's very easy to try to build a matrix and rank people and assign points, and then they fall in a certain way and you make a selection, and it completely misses what's really important and what's necessary. And, you know, even looking at this list, for example, some things that were mentioned before, like, you know, prior experience in ICANN and kind of the internet community, I think is one of those things that's hard to measure, but it's really critical, because if you don't get that, it's very hard to be effective and so forth. You know, ability to work as a team member is critical, because, you know, your ability to influence people and work with people is, you know, absolutely critical. You know, previous board skills, that doesn't tell you very much. There are, you know, lots of people that are, you know, members of nonprofit boards that are very small, you know, at your, you know, club association or something. It's completely irrelevant to ICANN. And, you know, when I say prior board experience, one of the things that this board does need is a certain number of people that have had board experience at a fairly high level and at fairly big boards, because they, you know, ICANN is now a, you know, a 60-plus million organization, and aspects of it need to be run like a proper professional board. And if you get people that don't have any experience there, they don't know how to do that. Another sort of example is, I think on the finance committee side, it's always been a bit of a challenge to find a good set of people to be on finance committee, from a combination of having the proper skills, having a desire to work in that space. And when I look at that list there, I don't really see anything that captures that. Financial statement review and analysis, how does that relate to what the finance committee really needs? Or is it budgeting? Is it planning? What I would say is at one level, what the NOMCOM is really doing is the equivalent of a personnel search. And you need to look at that, and you need to have a lot of one-on-one dialogue with the individuals you're considering, making sure you really understand what skills they bring and also that you understand what weaknesses and gaps they have. I think one of the biggest challenges has been selecting people that look good on paper according to the skills, and then when they get on the board, you find out that there's actually some gaps that are problematical.
Just to interject there, I mean, first of all, this list is one that has been used actually for a different purpose. So this is simply a starting point of attributes, and it's not meant to be final in any way. In fact, very much want the new boxes to be filled out. That's the whole goal, is to, to get that full list of attributes from the community broadly. So this is used internally by the board governance committee when it's thinking about assignments to the subcommittees. It's only intended as a starting point, and we move on from there. That's one thing. One of the things that the nominating committee has been doing and is improving each year is a process of face-to-face interviews with candidates. So the selection process gets more and more specific down to a final pool. And I think we interviewed 12 people last year. And that's where you really get into, you can begin to understand the person a little bit more. It's not ideal because you don't have that much time, but, we're getting better at that. It is becoming very much a sort of, a professional recruitment process. And I think we're doing, we're learning a lot because of that. And you can get down to those human characteristics that otherwise don't come through. So,
yeah.
The soft skills and whatnot.
Thomas covered a bunch of the items that I was going to put on. There are a couple of things that are not there and are hard to quantify and hard to measure in any objective way, but I think are critical. The first one, which is critical for every director, I believe, is a passion for the internet ecosystem. They're going to be asked to put in a huge amount of work. No matter what you end up paying them, it's not going to be nearly enough. They're going to give up other things in their life. They have to be really motivated to do this. And it's not necessarily people who say they are going to be who meet that qualification. Somehow you have to measure that some other way. And personal interviews are clearly one of the techniques. The two things that are never on this kind of list that I feel are absolutely crucial for the board to have among its skill sets are generalists and people that I consider quick studies. Quick studies. People who can take something that they have never heard anything about before because they're going to be asked to think about it. And, vertical integration is a good one. That's very few people have skill sets that included that before, but they're being asked to think about it, understand it, try to understand the first, second, and third order effects of it. And the same is true for technical issues. The board is going to have to make decisions on things that most of these people are not trained in and yet are expected to make intelligent, thoughtful decisions on it. It's not everyone who can do that. And people who have a long experience in working in that kind of environment where you're continually jumping into things you know nothing about and have to make the right decision is a really critical quality. And I don't know how you measure it again. And someone saying they have it doesn't necessarily mean they do. But I think both of those are absolutely crucial. Not everyone on the board is going to have those qualities, but you need some people on the board who have absolutely none of those specific qualities, but are agile and quick thinking and thoughtful. And thoughtful is another one that I'd like to see there. because the first impression that you get sometimes is not the one that we need to end up with. Thank you.
To pretty much agree what Ellen just said. I just simply like to amplify what Ellen and others brought up, is that putting my .Asia head back on, is that we've gone through a three-year negotiating contract with the ICANN board and later with the ICANN staff, not to mention about the recent actually XXX case. I mean, whether you like it or not, it's another 5 or 7-plus years of processes. So these days we are talking about those probably meets with the current standard, but we are dealing with unprecedented challenges in the next 2-3 years, where we be batch processing the TODs in the volume of 1,000, 1,500s or more. And the board, despite of, I mean, besides those, attributes here, a really good, like what Ellen just mentioned, a quick study, understand what a particular TOD string means to a community, to a standard, and in a batch processing, 9 to 20 months of timeline, the board would have to make a decision for a particular string, and we are talking about that times 1,000.
Any more thoughts? Anyone wants to? We can go back to the slide, perhaps, and the next slide is referring to, I think, probably referring to the other part of the community. Yes, the directors are important. Yes, it is the requirement to think formally about what are needed for the attributes of the director. But we also have to consider the GNSO, CCNSO, and ALAC. These are positions that the nominating committee is going to be selecting for this year. And it's important to understand what are the qualities needed in these particular areas as well. So if people have thoughts on how Vanda's team is going to be addressing the GNSO, where one of the new bylaws requirements is that, as I think everybody will probably know, the GNSO now is divided into houses. There's a contracted and a non-contracted house, and the nominating committee has to select into those houses, which is a different set of skill sets. The person is going to, if they're working with a contracted house, the registries and registrars, they may want certain sets of experience, and the non-contracted house, where they're working with commercial and non-commercial stakeholder groups, different sets of issues perhaps are coming up. And this is a complication for the nominating committee. It is quite difficult. We've had to address it this year a little bit, and it was quite hard. The CCNSO, the CCTLD managers, placing one person each year into that very specific community is quite
very close,
and a very close community. What attributes can that person bring? And then the ALAC, which is maturing as an organization, regionally organized, what skill sets can benefit, what can we do to strengthen the ALAC? And so if people have thoughts on these particular three issues, I think just jump in rather than taking any first. But, is there something there that you'd like to comment on and try and help us over the coming year with these? Aisha.
Aisha Hassan, ICC. Thank you, Adam and Vanda. A couple of thoughts come to mind. Some other colleagues have mentioned in the previous discussion about the kinds of interpersonal skills that are helpful. Given the kinds of issues that will be dealt with in those three structures, it is helpful, especially given the designation now that the NOMCOM will be doing for the NOMCOM appointees in those structures, that somebody has a breadth of interpersonal skills and ability to listen, an interest in understanding the different viewpoints, because, for instance, in the GNSO, there really are a range of viewpoints. Within the business sector, there's a range of viewpoints. Somebody that has an interest in understanding and helping to make those structures work effectively and efficiently. That desire, I think, goes a long way in the dynamics at play and the very important issues that those structures grapple with. Another thing that I have mentioned in other settings, and I believe that at this juncture for ICANN is really critical, is an understanding of how ICANN fits into the international landscape on internet governance issues. In the coming couple of years, there will be some very critical conferences of different kinds happening in the landscape, which ICANN is a part of. And I think the more people involved in the structures of ICANN at all levels, let alone the community, but the more people involved in those structures who have a sense of that, they don't have to be an expert in it, but having a sense of how ICANN fits into that landscape will truly help overall to keep moving the organization forward in strengthening its overall concept of how it fits in and how it can best be effective as we grapple with really important decisions. Thanks.
Comment on both the GNSO and the ALAC separately. The issue with the GNSO is particularly interesting, especially now that since you will be not only assigning a non-com appointee to the GNSO, but you will be assigning them to a particular house or non-house. And I understand the intent is to potentially reassign people each year, which is going to put an interesting challenge on each NOMCOM to understand the skills of the previous appointees. But it's not clear, and I think the NOMCOM is going to have to decide what the intent is of assigning someone, for instance, to the contracted party's house. The GNSO is often very divided between the contracted parties and non-contracted parties. When you're putting someone on the contracted party's house, is the intent to give them an extra vote to help them achieve their aims? Is it an independent person who may almost deliberately be against the contracted parties? And the same is true on the other side. Or is it someone independent enough but you want to make sure is going to be able to at least understand the perspective of the contracted parties or the non-contracted parties, and then make a judgment call as to which side they want to be on, if it is indeed a divided issue, as many of them are. So there's really a philosophical issue here, and I don't know the right way to answer it. I have my personal opinions, but it's going to be a real challenge because you're in a position almost to dictate how some votes are going to go in the following year, and you don't really, I'm not sure you want to be doing that. So think about it carefully. In terms of the ALAC, our experience in general has been that ALAC, incoming ALAC, non-com appointees don't have a clue what to expect. The same can be true for some of the RALO appointed ones, but that's not your problem. It's real difficulty, and as a result, I won't try to make a statistical analysis, but I suspect well over half of the NOMCOM appointees are not particularly effective because of that. And if you look at how few of them you reappoint the second time, that may be a measure of it. So I've been around the ALAC now for 5 years, and I'm still not sure I can give you a simple list that's easy to understand that will help you explain the situation, but somehow between at large and the and your group, you've got to come up with something better than we've currently used on the website before to explain what it is they're getting into. Thank you.
Yeah, just some comments on the GNSO side of things, really. One of the things I struggled with as a NOMCOM member last year was the worry and difficulty of basically changing the balance of power within the GNSO by an appointment. And as a non-commercial person, my difficulty, I don't think I'm saying anything I shouldn't be, but was really that by appointing people from particular, you know, professional backgrounds or from a particular milieu, let's just say it in that way, that we ran the risk of effectively changing votes, determining outcomes, and almost reaching down into policy, which obviously isn't her job. But from the point of view of the candidates that you see in the pool and that you have to choose from, people with experience also come with baggage, and so it's something that is it I think presents a real dilemma. The second aspect of the GNSO that I struggled with, and I think will continue to really, is partly in the assigning of people to voting and non-voting into particular houses. To be able to do that in an effective way, you really have to know an incredible amount of up-to-date information on who's who in the GNSO, what are the issues, what's the balance of power. And, you know, so whilst I think the goal of the NomCom has been to appoint useful people who can be, you know, put anywhere in the GNSO and be helpful and do what Aisha was talking about, the soft skills, the building coalitions, the taking a new and thoughtful view on issues. It's hard given the background of people and the people we have available to us to do that all the time. I think that's the role, and I think that's as a committee that's generally the goal. But it's bloody difficult with the GNSO. So I think that's going to be an ongoing dilemma and something we just have to be very conscious of and, you know, continue to inform ourselves about the GNSO. But I think it's always going to be a difficulty.
Yeah. well, that's one point that I completely disagree with, the idea of this kind of interference from the non-com inside the organization, you know, it's like given the power to non-com to choose who's gonna sit in each committee inside the board, or who's gonna be vice chair or chair or something. You are interfering with the decision, internal decision of the group. And I'm very open to debate this very deeply with John Jeffrey and the General Counsel and their legal groups to rethink about this interpretation. Because from my point of view, we already have this discussion in this year in the non-com, and our interpretation was we don't need it to do that. It's a choice, and non-com should not choose that. But after that, we got the feedback from the General Counsel that we should decide who's going to be voting, who's going to not be voting. And from my point of view, it's you know, beyond the decision of that. Go ahead, Thomas.
Can you just clarify for me? I mean, either you do decide who's voting and non-voting, or you don't. How can that be subject to interpretation? I'm missing something pretty fundamental here.
Oh, Sam, or
Sam, did you want to go?
Yeah.
So just to be clear, within the bylaws, there is a requirement that the NomCom, when it makes its appointments, the NomCom makes three appointments to the GNSO, and it says in the bylaws that the NomCom shall appoint one of the representatives to each of the houses. And so within the structure, the representatives that are appointed to the houses are the voting, and then the person who's not appointed to a house is the non-voting. And so I think that there's still some difference out there between some interpretations of whether that's supposed to happen on a yearly basis or just at the time of the initial appointment. But it is clear that the NomCom has a responsibility to appoint people who are intended to be voting delegates into each house.
And what happened this year is this was a bylaw change that happened while we were sort of during our process.
During the process.
Yeah, and we interpreted it one way, or we acted on the previous bylaws as opposed to acting on the new version of the bylaws. So it was one of those transitional sort of issues that has happened. But the situation now, the situation for the 2012 NomCom is pretty clear. You will be assigning into a house, and when you do that, that will affect the current assignments as well, because obviously there's going to be one way or another, it will affect the
So does that mean that the whole discussion about whether to appoint voting or non-voting is moot and irrelevant because it's been decided and there's no question about that at this point? Does it mean the whole conversation we've just been having about whether they're for voting or non-voting is basically moot because the issue is off the table, it's clear what you're doing?
No, it's not. What Vanda will have to do is we now have a current arrangement because we've just assigned two people to particular houses and somebody to the non-voting seat. But next year there'll be one vacancy, so depending on what the decision is, it could re-change the whole arrangement. At the moment, there is one person whose term will end this year, and they are currently a non-voting member. Perhaps they will. The best candidate will be someone who is suitable, in the nominating committee's opinion, for the contracted house. In which case, you'd have to rejig the whole arrangement.
Rearrange it.
Yeah, it's complicated, and yeah.
But that is something that NomCom understands it has to do.
It does now understand it has to do, yes.
I mean, that's what I'm just getting at. It sounded like there's a debate about what your role was and whether to do something or not do something.
No. The problem last year was that we didn't really know what our role was. Now we do know what our role is, but it's still rather complicated, if you see what I mean. Yeah.
It's still interfering with the internal decision of the because whatever we choose will impact the decision of internal GNSO. So it's something that, in my point of view, we need to rethink because it's beyond the decision of NomCom. You know, it has no meaning for that. And please.
Do you want to go to Mary then? Yeah, Olaf, please.
Indeed. A comment from Mary Wong in the chat room. Section 3.8 of the bylaws. A. The connected parties house includes the registrar's stakeholder group, 3 members, the registrar's stakeholder group, 3 members, and 1 voting member appointed by the ICANN nominating committee for a total of 7 voting members. And B, the non-contracted party house includes the commercial stakeholder group, 6 members, the non-commercial stakeholder group, 6 members, and 1 voting member appointed by the ICANN nominating committee to that house for a total of 13 voting members. And she's continued to type.
So I think that there may be some additional conversation that's still needed on this, because one of the things that we are trying to do is to see if there's any quote-unquote legislative history surrounding the inclusion of this provision within the GNSO restructuring to see if there was an intention for this to be a yearly assignment or to determine if at the point that the NomCom makes an appointment, that appointment is for a 2-year period for the full term of the GNSO counselor, which is the cleanest reading of the bylaws, so that the NomCom does not go into a power shifting mode, but instead makes an appointment based on the skill sets and information available to them at the beginning of the point when they make the appointment, and then they don't have to go back through and have the next year's NomCom reassess the value of a candidate that was appointed the year before. So we're still working on some of that.
The history of why we have 2 voting and 1 non-voting NomCom appointees that is some are more equal than others, can go into it's irrelevant because it's not going to change at this point. The politics of the decision were extremely difficult, and that's what we ended up with. The words in the bylaws that say the NomCom makes the appointment, I believe was, and others, some others believe was quite ill-advised, but it ended up there, and it was approved by the board, and it's there. But I'll point out that if the NomCom is worried about power shifting by them making the choice, it's probably less of a worry than the self-selection which might be happening internally. That is, just think of the situation of someone being appointed by the NOMCOM but not identified what house they're in. That person looks at the contracted parties and says, comrades. And the NOMCOM, the contracted parties say, yes, we want him, we want him. You know, you're essentially at that point almost guaranteeing that you've given them an extra vote. Because the people who like each other and will vote the same way may be attracted to each other. So the problem is there regardless. The old structure had the NOMCOM people just sitting on council and not affiliated with any of them. The new structure is different. It adds a whole bunch of nuances and problems, and we're stuck with them. Someone's going to end up making that decision. Whether the NOMCOM should be redoing the appointments each year, I think the people who suggested that envisioned that, but perhaps almost deliberately it wasn't spoken.
I mean, as a former nominating committee member, my concern is that you look at a candidate pool, you know, the people before you, and you want to pick the best person, and it becomes complicated when you're trying to think, how is that person then going to vote, and then how is that going to affect the future dynamics of the nominating committee? Because, you know, it's another complication. You really want the best person to bring into ICANN, and then you try to think, are they going to vote this way or that way? You don't really know, and that's the concern, and you really do want the best person. Just jump to Thomas and then Ching.
Yes, thanks. So one observation just on that is there's at least two ways of looking at what the NOMCOM is doing. One way is you're selecting individuals, and you're looking only at the individual and the skill set that they bring. And the other view is that you're trying to build an effective team, whether it's on the board or whether it's on the ALAC or the GNSO or whatever. And probably either extreme is not exactly right, but if you don't consider how a person fits in and it becomes part of the team, the larger group you're appointing them to, I think the NOMCOM is simply not doing its job. Because at the end of the day, an appointee's effectiveness is strongly tied to how well they're going to play on the team.
I think you covered the points I would like to make. I mean, ideally, if you find a person that is passionate, that is knows the game playing for different houses, ideally, if the person is being rotated to different houses, he or she should make a right choice of voting or whatever. So that's the ideal case. But the fact is that we may find one person that prefer a commercial and non-profit. So the point I'm trying to make is that I thought we were going to talk about the qualities and also the experience, but we are more, it seems that we have more interest in how the NOMCOM appointed to the GSO. But so let me just briefly state the question that I have. I mean, actually a higher level question is that, what's the selection process right now? Is that a candidate stated that he would like to be considered by the NOMCOM, and then NOMCOM or the candidate can be like free to choose which constituency that he or she will be able to serve? Do they have that liberty for this type?
Yes. What the application form asks is which of the four positions that the nominating committee is selecting for do you wish to apply for? And then you can prioritize. So it might be
that's interesting.
Or you can choose one. So you don't. You can apply for the board, or you could apply for the ALAC, or you could apply CCNSO first choice, ALAC second choice.
I see.
So you have the choice, and you do prioritize and indicate to the nominating committee what your preference is.
Right. It seems that to me, I mean, if I understand correctly, is that the priority, if one candidate gets in, the most sort of quote-unquote powerful role will be the board, and then he or she may have a voting right in GNSO. And then I'm not saying the CCNSO, I mean, the vote from the CCNSO is not important, but, I mean, from the community, I think there's a rough consensus on of knowing that the votes as a board member and as a GNSO counselor probably weighing a little bit more than the other two. I'm not making judgment here. I'm just throwing some rough sort of the understanding here.
what you generally see in the application pattern is about, we had 88 applicants last year, and about 50 of them preferred the board. But there were actually, because of the, I think as we've improved the process of outreach and actually gaining candidates, there were more, what you're seeing is more and more people who are specifically applying for ALAC or CCNS or GNSO. Okay. And that's an improvement in how the NOMCOM is understanding how to do outreach and so on. So there was a very early bias towards almost everybody wanted the board and, you know, not the other positions, but now we're seeing a much stronger candidate pool across the whole scope. So it's very positive from that point of view. Okay. Olivier and Bertrand in the room, we've moved on to discussing some of the issues about the attributes of a GNSO, CCNSO and ALAC, but if you would like to go back and talk about board of directors and what you think the skill sets are involved in that, please do so, because we're, you know, and thank you for coming along. Good to see you both. Olivier?
Thank you very much, Adam. Olivier Crépin-Leblanc. I don't know if there's a transcript or not, but if there is one, I've said my name. And I'm sorry for arriving late, so I might be repeating what's been said before. But having been on the NOMCOM, and from my experience, I think that the NOMCOM has to find the right person for the right job, who has the right amount of time to devote to that job as well. There's always a tendency to get a superstar out there that has done an enormous number of things, has got a huge CV, that is super qualified, and that on paper would be doing an excellent job. Unfortunately, that person might already be extremely busy, which means that you end up with some superstar that you rarely are able to engage in the process fully enough to take full... to make full use of their capabilities. On the subject of outreach, I think it's an extremely important part of the NOMCOM, which isn't emphasized enough. When the NOMCOM is mentioned in the community, often people think, well, you need to be able to select the right person. That's where your skill lies. And in fact, I think the skill actually lies perhaps even more in being able to have access to a large pool of candidates, go out there from day one, not only personally, but go back to your community and ask your community to find the right people. And your community doesn't need to find more people within the community, but maybe even outside of the ICANN processes. And I think that's an important thing. On the subject of the NOMCOM, the NOMCOM's independence and whether it should whether it should be perhaps more integrated with the rest of ICANN or whether it should be somehow have to answer to parts of ICANN, I am for the NOMCOM to be totally independent, to have its own views about things. Each NOMCOM has to find out what is going on, take an overall picture of all of ICANN from an outsider's point of view, and having access to being able to have confidential information often from various from all the different SOs and ACs and the different parts of ICANN and the CEO and the staff and so on. You have to form your own view of what you think is really required, because there are times when each community is going to just look at what they need in front of them and they'll say, well, that's what the board needs because that's what we need. And I don't think that's the right way to do it. Yes, when you are going to appoint someone for the GNSO or for CCNSO or ALAC, fine, you have to satisfy the need that they think they need. But when it comes down to the board, it's up to you to make your own point of view on this. That's just my personal feeling about it. Thank you.
From remote participants, Ole Jacobson says, might be worth pointing out that a board member does not represent the constituency he or she came from, but serves as a member of the board. And Mary Wong commenting on that, that's true, Olaf. They may be selected by their SOAC, but are not meant to represent that SOAC on the board. And Olaf agreeing exactly. End of string.
I just wanted to tee up the issue of both conflicts and ethics. So
you know, hopefully some of these thorny issues about conflict of interest get worked out at a higher level in ICANN, but they also have to be considered here. And I would say in addition to absence of conflict of interest, we should be promoting best practices on ethical decision-making. What does that mean? So, you know, arguably anybody we appoint to any body will be thinking of these fiduciary duties to the organization and using those as guidelines and that kind of thing. Even just having some transparency about that, I think, helps alleviate a lot of the concerns in picking the right person.
Hi, Bertrand Lachapelle. Sorry for having come late due to another meeting. One point was made, I think, yesterday in one of the public comments regarding the CEO selection. I think it was TT, who made the point about track record in sustainability. And the image that came to mind, you know, sometimes in a certain number of toilets, you have, please leave the place in better shape than you found it. Which is very and there's an element when you evaluate the CV, and it made me think, when you evaluate the curricula of somebody, there are track records that look beautiful on paper, and at the same time some of the decisions that have been made during the period of the tenure of the person are actually producing consequences later on that were very detrimental for the organization. It's extremely difficult to evaluate this, but in the query that you can make for candidates, asking the question, are there things where you had the opportunity to see either a mistake or a beneficial effect from a decision you made in the long term is very important, because one of the things that distinguishes ICANN as an organization from normal business practice is that when you do a bad business decision, you harm your company normally and not much outside. When you do a bad decision in policy, you harm third parties. And the dynamics of your decisions have to really be anticipated. So this criteria in almost all aspects is not a sole criteria, but it's an important one to take into account. The second quick point is regarding the question of representation. I've said over and over before I joined the board and after I joined the board that I attach a great importance to this notion of independence and non-representation. People who are on the board, wherever they come from, are not the representative in a sort of electoral representative democracy approach. The right criteria is a different one, in my view, is the capacity to listen and to make sure that the views are being conveyed. And the way I see that is one of the greatest competences that we all need on those things is an element of trust, which is, I trust that person on whatever council, board, or else, to take into account my views, even if he or she doesn't share them. That's extremely important. Like, I can be sure, and I want to be sure, that if I say something through one of the board members, the GNSO elect members, even if that person doesn't agree, he or she will say, listen, I have been told that this element has to be taken into account. That's a very important criteria. And the final point is, each of those four bodies have different working methods, which somehow correspond to different working personalities. The ALAC in particular is a tricky one for the very reason that Olivier was mentioning. It requires an incredible amount of engagement and time and work and iteration. And the balance between having somebody who is very well known, very respected, and who will be willing to devote that amount of time is one of the trickiest things. Probably ALAC is one of the most delicate because people don't necessarily understand the amount of work that is going to be involved in the working methods. And in the promotion of the announcement, it may be useful to highlight more precisely the types of working methods in each space, because they are different, the amount of time that is needed and so on.
Thank you. Yeah, there was one of the things you mentioned, Bertrand, about the, you know, the notion of leaving the place in a better condition than you left it. It's very close to an interview question that we were thinking of last year, and it's something that can probably be, improved because of that. So thank you. It's good. Yes. Anybody else in the queue? It is Olivier.
Thank you, Adam. I was going to comment on the comment which was made online with regards to the independence of board members. Yes, in theory, all board members are supposed to act for the better interest of ICANN and not of their own community. However, a cat thinks like a cat, a dog like a dog, a rooster like a rooster, and a monkey like a monkey. We are all subject to our own cognitive thought processes. And so someone in an SO or coming from an SO on the board will think like an SO member. Someone from an advisory committee will think in that sort of way. So, of course, they will make the decisions based on the information that they have and based on their view of what would benefit ICANN. But at the same time, there's always that side of them which will still make them be biased somehow towards their own community, although they might be trying to go against it. But the way that they think, the way that they analyze the information, their decision will be influenced by their background. Thank you.
Yeah, Olivier, exactly. I believe that the idea to have non-com choosing independent persons is just to compensate to make a balance inside the board, you know, bring someone for with other profile, this kind of thing. So that should be the focus of non-com. Bertrand?
Just in addition to what Olivier was saying, this is true, but it is not necessarily a problem. It is, I would call that a lens. Any physical, the analogy is the following. You get this room. If you take a picture in the visible wavelength scope, you will have one picture. If you take it in infrared or ultraviolet, you have two different pictures, and they provide additional information. So the framework and the pattern and mental framework that you are rightly quoting is different from being a representative. It's having a frame of analysis of situations that actually help the board and all the other structures have the complete landscape of parameters. And one of the challenges for the NOMCOM is to ensure not only that the people will be conveying the different elements from the community, but that also the lenses are relatively complete. In a certain way, to have the whole spectrum of lenses, i.e. a business angle, a very human rights-oriented angle or whatever. Not for representation, but for spectrum analysis in a certain way.
Yeah, I do believe that you're right. And from my point of view, the different skills that come from the community, you know, is quite relevant to have a point of view when you're going to make a decision of that. Because you need to listen to GNSO. The problem is very peculiar sometimes. And even you can analyze the answer as, you know, that's their business, but they understand their business. They can explain their business, and you can make the decision based also in that new understanding. And you have the clear and transparent information that guy has this kind of profile and comes from this community. So I don't see no problem, but the non-com should bring to this community some independent views and other views, like we have Bertrand or Jean-Jacques that came from the diplomatic area and gave us a very clear, you know, orientation about behavior and about how to deal with those you know, crazy countries or wherever. So that's very important. So that's the idea to have non-com. And I would like to add something that I'm thinking about, and I would like to start this discussion from now on, is the whole of non-com. Is the role of non-com, in my view, should go to the path that the decision make should be done for, you know, this, the committee should define and select it and outreach better people for the board. But can outreach, for instance, but not make the decision and leave the decision for the constituents. And, you know, take out and look for the community itself, like GNSO, WALAC, and CCNSO. And, you know, let's to think they are mature enough to have their process inside and decide who is the best person for that position. Well, it's something that we need to think about if our the information, you know, who is going to, the decision of these people and the value that the people that we select in this group inside, for instance, the CCNSO makes any difference, will contribute with something, or it will be better to have an internal process and leave the cross-fertilization, let's say that, for the high level of the organization, that is the board. So that is one thing that I believe we need to you know, start to think, because you know, the organization is become mature and growing, and should we keep the same role? So that's something that you know, the dynamic of this organization demands that we have open mind and rethink things that we decide, you know, 5 years ago. And why it's important, is still important or not. So it's something that I would like to debate. We start to have a breakfast this morning and talk with this idea. I talk with this, I raised this idea in ALAC, in GNSO, in CCNSO, and we raised in ASO and so on. So it's just to start to rethink things. We cannot, in this kind of organization, in this kind of environment, with the change of the role of ICANN in the future, we need to rethink everything all the time. So, and why not non-com?
It's not fixed, really.
Yeah, it's Jean-Jacques.
Jean-Jacques and Alan, and then that would be the last one.
Right.
Yep. Oh, we've got people waiting. Okay.
Yeah.
Right, let's see what we can do.
Okay. I'd just like to underline the very close link between NOMCOM's duty or task and the problem of overall governance, especially in the board. It so happens that on the board there is one committee which is not equal to the other committees but above the other committees, and that is the BGC, for historic reasons. I think that if we want to arrive at an even more efficient recruiting process with a NOMCOM, then at the same time something should be done about improving the transparency and governance of the board, including the BGC. Example, it is the BGC which determines on a list of candidates of board members who will fit into what committee. And it is the BGC which determines and proposes to the full board who will be the chair of that particular committee. coming to Vanda's point about we should let things happen in a democratic way, I think that it is up to the members who have been, who have expressed their interest in serving on this or that board committee, once they have been appointed by the board, to actually elect their own chair. That is a very fundamental thing, and I'm surprised that after all these years and remarks by many board members over the years, that has not happened. So I would encourage you to have that discussion as well at a very high level, perhaps with the chair of the board.
I'm sorry, we have a hard stop at 10:30. We have people waiting, so...
Paul McGrady, I just wanted to note my presence here. I'm on the 2012 MONCOM, and I'm very grateful to hear us talking about these issues, especially the issues with regard to conflicts and ethics. Thank you.
Just a very quick sentence. Vanda has raised the issue of not needing the NOMCOM for other than the board. I agree it warrants discussion. My personal opinion is it would be extremely ill-advised, and I'd be glad to go into reasons offline. Thank you.
Sorry, thank you.